On this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show, we talk about the Hearthstone Championship Tour last weekend, all the news that we missed while I was gone, and a few big games of the week, including The Room, Old Sins. Stick with us.
I know a magical place we could go, so close your eyes and make a wish. For the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Touch Arcade Show is here. Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show. Today is January 26, 2018. Thanks a ton for downloading this episode, episode number 339. Did I say that? I don't think I did.
Sure. No, yes.
I'm Eli, and with me is Jared. Between the two of us, we've got nearly 20 years of experience covering mobile games on toucharcade.com, which is the place to go for iOS and kind of dipping our toe into Android stuff, but really just mobile games in general because everything's so cross-platform now. This podcast is basically a recap of the week. So, you know, if you don't read Touch Arcade all the time or you don't follow the mobile gaming scene, very often we try to pick out like our biggest and best stories of the week, kind of talk about them and go over them so you're not missing anything crazy happening in mobile because it moves ridiculously fast. This podcast, as well as the website itself, is primarily supported by Patreon, which you could find at patreon.com/toucharcade. If you're not into the subscription thing, not wild about Patreon, but still want to support the work we do, we'd really appreciate it if you could do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. We get a affiliate fee when you click through our link, which Amazon would otherwise just keep, so you can support the site at no cost to you. We've got two places you can hang out, and those are, well, three actually, hang out on our forums accounts, but we got a Discord at discord.gg/toucharcade and a Twitch at twitch.tv/toucharcade. If you're a Patreon backer, you get a video versus podcast where you can see us two yokels yammering in real time. And of course, we always appreciate iTunes reviews. And if you want to send us an email for any reason, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. So last week we recorded the podcast super early, which was because I was at the Hearthstone World Championship in the Netherlands.
Did you get blown over?
Yes. So that was kind of crazy. So the first day of the championship, I think, or maybe it was the second. No, I think it was the first day. They had this like freak storm in Amsterdam, where it was like seriously like hurricane force winds. It was like blowing trucks over on the highway. It was so windy. Like I've never been in a situation before where like you are unable to walk forward and just like leaning into the wind to not get blown backwards.
That's
like,
crazy.
So bizarre. And like it was so Amsterdam's a city of a bunch of like little like walkways basically, because it's just, you know, like most European cities not super built for cars. So like the wind was just like whistling through the town in like such a weird way, because like, you know, it's not arranged on a grid, so you know you'd have some streets that would just be like channeling the wind into like, you know, like the way that like those Dyson hand dryers work. What it like kind of reminded me of was that like you'd walk and you'd walk past like an alley, and that alley was just like a wind super highway. Because of the way, like, everything.
I feel like I would track down a squirrel suit and just run and jump and just see what happens, see where it takes you.
Well, dude, like, it was blowing so bad that, like, the venue in front, or, like, so the Hearthstone thing was held in this, I don't know if it says on here what the venue is. I should know this. I don't remember what the name of the building was, but it was, like, this super old school venue that, like, Dutch royalty have been married in and stuff. Like, on the inside, it was, like, you know, an old castle and stuff. So this is a huge old building. So the first day we were walking there, unbelievably windy. Like we're just trying to get inside, and it's blowing so hard that it's like knocking the clay shingles off the roof of this building. And they're just falling everywhere. And like the people from the building are just like freaking out and like trying to like get people off the sidewalk and everything else. And we're like, I'm like, but dude, but I need to go through that door. Like I just need to get inside. Like I'm not just passing through. And it was like this big to do, because I don't think that they spoke English, and I certainly didn't speak whatever language they were yelling at me. So yeah, that was something. And like, did I say that the street signs are blown flat?
I saw a picture of that. Yeah. That was nuts.
So that was crazy. And like, you know, if you looked on Reddit that day, like there's a couple of different videos of people like that fell over that were just being blown like leaves across like the tumbled squares in town and stuff. It was crazy. I had never ever have experienced anything like that before. So that was cool. A good way to start things off.
Yeah.
But the Hearthstone World Championship is really cool. I mean, Blizzard always puts on really good events. Always happy to be invited and included on their kind of esports stuff. Never really kind of know too much what to do from a coverage perspective. I meant to do kind of like a wrap-up thing with some player interviews and stuff, but I'm waiting for them to schedule those. So it's going to be kind of weird that it's going to come like a week after the event. But at the same time, I don't know how super time sensitive it is, because like anyone that really cared about the winners and stuff was watching it live on Twitch anyway. So
yeah.
It's not a huge deal. Trying to think what else kind of happened around then that would be relevant to talk about here. The Hearthstone events are just getting bigger and better, basically. So in previous events that they've flown me out to, there was jack shit to do other than watch Hearthstone. So like if you got bored watching Hearthstone, it was like, I don't know, go, you know, stand around outside or you know, get McDonald's or whatever you felt like doing. Whereas this one, they had opened up all sorts of like side events. So like there were like, you know, fan tournaments being run in like a different stage that had like panels running with, you know, like previous like winning pro players and like developers and things like that. So it was really, really cool how it seemed like it was less of like a tournament, more of just like a fan event that also had a huge tournament running. Because it was like you get bored of watching Hearthstone, you'd be like, all right, well, let's see what's on the other stage kind of thing. Or you know, stuff. So it was really cool. So if you ever have the opportunity to go to a Hearthstone event in your neck of the woods without traveling too far, I highly recommend checking it out. My girlfriend came with me and she doesn't even play the game. And like, you know, Blizzard emailed me and asked if I had any feedback about, you know, like the event or experience or whatever. And, you know, I sent them what I thought and, you know, asked my girlfriend, I was like, do you anything you want me to tell them, like you thought, you know, should be different or changed or anything like that. And her only feedback was like, she doesn't understand how they managed to make an event for a video game that she doesn't play that's still entertaining for her to be at and watch.
That's a compliment.
Which, yeah, I mean, like, when you think about it, like, that's pretty impressive that they've managed to kind of hit that. Because, like, we've talked about that a lot with the esports stuff on this podcast, is that, like, it seems challenging because, like, if you don't play and know the game, like, you're probably automatically not going to watch, right?
Yeah.
So it's cool that Blizzard's kind of hit that. The best thing that happened at the whole event though was that, so on the championship match, they do best of five for the championship games. So it was American dude versus a guy from Taiwan. American guy's name was Frozen and the guy from Taiwan is Tom 66028 or a bunch of numbers, I don't remember. But so the American dude like sweeps the first two games. And I was like, oh fuck, this is like, I hate it when you watch an event that's like a best of five thing and it's just like someone just gets pooped on, you know, because like you want that to be like a dramatic, like, oh my god, they're 1-1, oh god, they're 2-1, like I hope the other guy takes it and kind of thing, and you know, it goes to a game five, right? But this was so it's the first two he won, and then they're getting ready for the third game, right? And all of a sudden the confetti cannons all go off.
So like awesome.
just before the third game was about to start, it was like the most unbelievably random and hilarious thing ever, because like the other guy that was, you know, one game away from losing, right, just had this look on his face like sheer terror and panic, where like, because like the difference, I want to say the prize split was like 250,000 for the winner and then like 150,000 for second place. So like you're effectively playing for, you know, who gets the extra $100,000 or whatever the split ended up being. So dude looked like he was about to barf, right? And then like all of a sudden like the confetti cannons go off.
Oh god.
And
it was, that doesn't mess with your concentration at all.
Well, so he came back and won. So
yeah.
it was kind of interesting. So hopefully with Hearthstone esports, the random confetti turns into a thing that they do in the past. That's why I told him, that was my main feedback. I was like, please make accidental confetti a thing, because that was amazing. But anyway, so if you aren't into the Hearthstone thing, we got a bunch of other news to talk about this week. Starting off with something that you posted a couple days ago. Disk Drive 2 is coming February 1st. Did we know this was coming? I know they were talking, like they always toyed about the idea of making a sequel.
Yeah, they'd like hint here and there, but it was never really an official thing until this announcement was kind of the official public unveiling. But they had mentioned things on Twitter before that it was in the works.
I feel like my mental kind of where I was mentally with this game was like it seemed like they were always talking about it, and like I just thought it was one of those things that was just never going to come out. Because like you
write
that a lot of times where it's like, you know, a kind of niche old game, and they're like, oh, we're totally gonna make a sequel, and then it just never really happens.
Well, the guys that made Disk Drive and his two brothers, and the first one was just them two, and it was kind of like a hobby thing, and it took off. I mean, it was fairly popular, but I don't think it ever made very much money. And so, you know, I it was always kind of like, yeah, we'd love to do a sequel, but I mean, can we really justify it?
Yeah.
And so I think that's in part why it's taken so long. It's because I think a sequel has been on the books for a really long time, and they probably had a lot of design ideas, or maybe even have been working on the actual game for a really long time, but it's just taken this long to get it done because, you know, day jobs and things like that. But, so yeah, it's finally done and finished and coming out next week, and pretty radical change in a couple ways from the first game.
Yeah, we should talk about the first game's old enough that I don't know if everyone listening is.
Yeah, the first game came out in 2010, so it's an oldie, and basically it was based around a game called Pitch Car, a board game, a physical board game, and in that game you would like flick these discs down like a racetrack. And you'd race each other that way. And so these guys made like a digital version of that with Disk Driving. And so basically all you do is you flick a disc, it travels down the track a little bit, then the next person flicks their disc, and you kind of do this turn-based race around the track. And there's a couple like different power-ups. You can jump, you can stop on a dime if you're about to fly up the track. You can drop a bomb down for other people to hit. So it's sort of like a Mario Kart-ish turn-based racing game played via disc flicking.
This also came out like right around the time that like push notifications started to become a big thing in games, because they were doing like I feel like this came around right around when Words with Friends was also coming out, the first iteration. Like people were really wild about this style of game at the time, and like you would get in these weird loops where it's like if you just download Disk Driving, you would hit a point real quick where you do like, you know, the five games you're in, and you're just like, all right, well, this is dumb, I'm out. But like at this time, so this is like what, 2010, maybe something like that, 2011. You would like stack all these turn-based games. So it's like you would do all your Disk Driving moves, and then you would make all your Words with Friends moves, and then you would play all the other turn-based games. And then by that time, chances are there's a few things you could do again in Disk Driving, and then you'll make more Words with Friends moves. So you could like string like five or six of these games together and just play constantly. It seems like.
Yeah, and I always loved that because it was like, okay, you know, I can just take my turns and then you don't have to really think about it again. I mean, you might get the push notification that it's your turn, but I mean, if you're busy, you don't have to like stop everything and play someone.
Right.
You can kind of go when you need to, and or, you know, when you have the free time. And so that was always really appealing to me. And you could get, in the first game, you could get 20 games going at the same time. And the developers knew how much we were in love with this game. Like Arn especially would play it, and me would play it like every day for like 5 or 6 years before we actually took any sort of break. And a few of the other indie developers, it was definitely like an indie developer sort of like thing that everyone was in on. When conventions would come around, everyone was playing Disk Drive and stuff. Cool, you never really got super into it.
No, I don't know. Like, I just, my problem was like, by the time I got it, like, so it was you and Arn that were super into it. And then like, by the time I started playing it, it was like, you guys knew all the tricks. So that was the kind of interesting thing about this, is that like, you know, if you just look at the screenshots, it's like, you know, just, it seems like a track. And, you know, initially you start playing by just making your like move, which effectively amounts to like playing shuffleboard, you know, like you just flick your thing as far as you can go, you know, hit the next turn, flick your thing, your disc the next direction. But there's like this next level strat to the game where it's like when you know the secrets to Mario Kart, and like the shortcuts and things like that, because like you could hit bombs and like flick your disc onto another side of a track and like potentially skip like two whole turns and stuff.
Yeah.
So I never got that into it, because like by the time I started playing it was like you guys were just lapping me like every game.
Well, that was, and that was, one of the things actually why I eventually stopped playing, and, you know, I stopped playing and then I picked it up again a year later and played for a long time and then stopped again and then, you know, picked it up or whatever. I mean, I've come back to it a few different times, but I did ultimately quit playing because that's sort of how the online competition devolved into. It was like people that knew the jumps to take the massive shortcuts.
Yeah.
And in this sort of game, it's like, you know, you might try for a jump, and if you miss and you fall off, you get sent back and that's your turn. So you make no progress. And so it was very, very easy if you just made one wrong move to get totally lapped by the other guy because they made the jump that you didn't. And it kind of was not – it was a little bit skill, but it was also a lot of luck involved too because of the physics engine. So sometimes, you know, you'd be a totally capable player, but because you didn't make the special jump that the other guy did, you were going to lose no matter what. And that it sort of devolved into that to where everyone you were playing was just going straight for the big jumps.
Yeah, well, and that was the problem is that, like, if you made a big jump – like the risk to reward was messed up, I think.
Right.
It was like, because if you made a big jump, it would, like, you would skip like potentially half a lap or more even.
Yeah.
So like it was worth your time to like spend like as many turns as it took to make that jump.
Yeah.
So I know
to be fair, it was super fun finding those things and finding little tricks and seeing what sort of jumps you could make, because some of them were like, okay, you know, I got to set up in front of this boost pad. And then the massive speed of the boost pad coupled with my jump will launch me across, and then I'll have to hit this wall and hope that I don't, you know, rebound off and fall off or whatever. So there's like a lot of luck and stuff involved too, but it was really fun when you'd be like, damn, I can make that? Like, holy moly. But when the games turned into nothing but that, that's when it sort of lost the appeal to me.
Yeah. I hope they have tracks that are like a mix of that, where it's like, hey, if you want to play on like the no bullshit track, like this is a good one for you, where it's like you know, there's a couple speed ups and like maybe a couple easy jumps or whatever, and then like, hey, if you want to play on like the bullshit tracks where you can skip half of it if you know the right thing to do, like here you go.
Yeah, well, the sequels, like, first of all, you know, the biggest fundamental change is that you can do two flicks in one turn. And so before, you would flick your disc and it would go flying down and it might bump into walls or you know, hit a ramp or something. But you'd sort of just, it would be on doing what it's going to do until it comes to a stop, and that was it.
Right.
In this game, you can flick, and then you can be traveling, and then you can flick again in any direction. And that really, really changes things up. So you could do two straight flicks kind of quickly in a row to do, like, you know, gain a lot of speed. Or you could be careening off the edge and then quickly flick a second time to make yourself back on track and things like that. So that's a pretty big change to just the fundamental mechanics of the first game.
I just love like how minor that sounds, though. It sounds like the Melody Stacey's new hat. When it's like, oh, it's a new hat. Oh my God, I'm losing my shit. Now it's like, dude, you can swipe twice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's crazy. It makes all the difference too. And it's, I don't know. It's hard getting used to playing or, you know, knowing that you can take that second flick, because, you know, you'll flick and you'll just be watching it, waiting to see where you land. And you'll be like, oh, yeah, I could have been flicking again this whole time. You're so used to how you'd play in the first game.
Presumably this is going to be free to play, right? Do we know anything about the free to play model behind it?
Free to play has ads. Not sure if there is a removal of ads. I'll have to double check on that. But there is sort of like a VIP package that I think is like $5 or something like that, that gives you it's like a coin doubler, and it increases the number of, you know, races you can have at one time and some other different things. And then the other thing in this new game is the upgrades are or the power ups are upgradable. And then the discs that you unlock, you use coins for too. So like as you play, you'll earn coins, and then you can put those into unlocking new power-ups and then upgrading those power-ups. And then you can put them towards unlocking the new discs and stuff. And you can still kind of customize your own discs with colors and things like that. So it is free to play. I think as long as, you know, if you bought that VIP package, or even if you bought like maybe a coin pack or something like that, if it disabled ads, I don't think it'll be a big deal. The way it works right now is that ads play in the middle of a game. So you'll go, and then the opponent goes, and then I think you get to go again, and then you see an ad, something like that. Mm. So like every two,
typical kind of thing, you know.
And they're the kind of ads you can skip after a few seconds, so it's not like you're stuck for 30 seconds or anything like that. But just knowing me and how much I hate ads and how other people are the same, being able to get rid of them would be very nice.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think it'll be a pretty fair sort of free to play model.
Cool. I'm excited.
Anyway, it looks awesome. Comes out next Thursday. If you like the first one, I think you'll like this one.
Yeah. So real quick, Grid Autosport got updated. They added a few control options and made some other tweaks and stuff. So if this game got kind of like, I don't know, got shoved in a folder because you know you weren't super wild about control schemes or whatever else, and like how it worked your MFI controller. This is something you should definitely revisit. It's pretty cool. Great Autosport is just a great game overall. So if you haven't downloaded it and you care at all about racing games, you should check it out. Got a pretty good review up on the site, a bunch of other stuff about it. So if you should very easy to find things about this game. So I thought this was kind of interesting. The this week the GPD Win 2 is got available to pre-order. So if you haven't heard of these things, GPD is a company. I think it's short for Gamepad Digital, and they make these like weird little gizmos that are like clamshell mobile like PCs more or less. This one is anyway. Like they also previously before they got involved in making this these like mini PCs, they were doing like what amounted to like really weird Android devices that had like ran Linux and could do emulators and stuff like that. But this one is actually well, so the first GPD Win was powered by a Intel Atom processor, which is like a super underpowered processor, and like it couldn't it, like it could do a lot of stuff, but not very well because of how slow the processor in it was. So there's a bunch of other like weird little things people didn't like about the original unit. And it seems like from reading the different communities that follow the stuff this company makes, like everyone seems super happy with all the changes that they've made with this one, both in putting like, you know, what amounts to like a more like a real processor and GPU in it, as well as you know, just fixing like weird little things. I guess like the old one like vented out like right on your hands as opposed to like out the side, and you know, just like weird little things like that that you maybe don't really think of until you have a ton of people using your thing and sending you feedback and stuff. Which is interesting that, you know, the hardware is so iterative with something like this. You would think that they would figure everything out before they made it, but so this is available for pre-order. For the cheapest you can get it is $649, but I don't know. It's interesting that this kind of falls into this weird spot that I feel like the Switch has kind of like really soaked up, because like before it was like, you know, so you have your mobile devices, and then if you wanted to play like a PC game on the go, it was like, all right, we'll bring your laptop, I guess, but that's a weird solution. And this, the GPD Win, the first one, kind of was like, hey, well, you can bring me, like I'm a, it's kind of like the size of the original 3DS, kind of maybe a little bit thicker.
It's portable, but still kind of bulky.
But if you really wanted to like play World of Warcraft on the go or whatever, like you can do that because World of Warcraft's probably never going to come to the iPhone or whatever else. So like it seemed like it filled kind of an interesting niche. But as this, so as the Switch came out and got pretty popular and is getting more and more ports, it becomes kind of a questionable value proposition, because it's like if you buy the Switch for $300 and get Skyrim on it versus buying this thing for 650 and playing Skyrim on it, like it seems weird. But I guess you have the flexibility of playing anything in your Steam library or anything that runs on Windows 10. So
I'd say that's if price, you know, sounds kind of crazy just initially, but if you take into account that, okay, well, I spent $300 on a Switch and then 60 on Skyrim and 60 on L.A. Noire and whatever, that stuff can add up quick. And if you own those games already in Steam and you want to take them on the go, then it might be cheaper to drop more money on this thing and you already have the
I
games.
mean, potentially, yeah, like lifetime value, this could be way better, because, and especially Steam games, I should stop playing with my AirPad, or AirPods case, so it stops doing this on my iPad. But Steam games often can be like a buck, you know,
Oh,
we're like
all the
thrown
time,
in
man.
like a huge bundle with all sorts of stuff. Like I have in my Steam library, I have hundreds of games that I haven't even downloaded, because it's just like, you know, Humble Bundle and other sites every once in a while will do like a name your price bundle, where it gets to a point where, and they always like they structure it like any other software bundle, right? Where it's like, oh, if we get you know, $500,000 or whatever, these things are unlocked, and they hit a point where it's like, I don't even know if I even care about these games, but you
You're
get so
getting
much
30
shit.
games,
Yeah,
whether you want them
here,
or
take
not.
my $5, because like this seems too good to pass up. So, when you look at it that way, like you could potentially get a lot of value out of this sort of thing. They emailed us asking if we wanted to review units, and I emailed them back and said, yeah. So, I'm
I
really
think it sort of
curious.
falls within the realm. It does it have a touchscreen? It does, right? I'm pretty sure it does.
I don't know. I don't think
I watched
it's.
this review video, and the guy at one point touches it and says, you know, has touch functionality. But so hey, Touch Arcade.
Yeah,
But
I mean,
I think just from a tinker's perspective, like the Switch is great if you just don't want no fuss and you want to play a game and have it work right and stuff like that. Like, that's cool. But if you want to do tinkering and stuff, something like this could be a lot more interesting. Yeah. You can do your own development on it. You can play tons of homebrew stuff. I don't know. It seems like a really neat thing, but who knows?
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to. I mean, they've sold what? Yeah, so their original goal for this was $100,000, right. And they've sold $1.5 million worth of them from 2,500 backers right now with 2 months left on it.
People are interested. I mean, I think it helps that they had that first generation one that was pretty well received despite the things that people complained about. So people know it's like a real company. The product will come. And it'll do pretty much what it advertises. So
I find the photo on here. Like some of the product demo photos they have are just like absurd. There's like one where, yeah. So sorry if you're all on the video podcast,
but like it's charts.
It's like a person that has Microsoft Excel open on this thing. So just to give you an idea of what this thing looks like. So imagine like a laptop. Yeah. But like make it comically small to the point that it's like the size of a 3DS. So it has a 6-inch screen diagonal, so I give you an idea how small it is. And like one of the promo images is like someone typing on this like keyboard that's like maybe as wide as like two BlackBerry keyboards.
That's a thumb typing keyboard without a doubt. There's no way you could type in a traditional way on that like they're showing.
Yeah, this is just absurd. So I don't know. I can't imagine why they would put this up. Other than to just show
showing the flexibility, man. You can do a lot of things with it.
So yeah, it seems really cool. What I like about it too is it charges over USB-C. So like, with USB-C, I remember when MacBooks first switched to it, I was like, this fucking sucks. Like, I really liked the MagSafe stuff and everything else. But like now that everything's starting to charge over USB-C, like I kind of want my iPhone to be USB-C.
I know. I've thought about that too.
Because it's like I can carry, like when I travel, I can carry one charger, charge my MacBook, charge my Switch. If I had one of these things, I could charge that too. I could charge my phone, all from one thing, which is really, really neat to have that level of universality.
Lightning's not going away.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. I'll carry two cables. But yeah. Anyway, so if this sounds interesting to you, just type into Google GPD space Win, WIN space 2. And you'll find all sorts of videos. You'll find the Indiegogo and
it looks really cool.
Other stuff. Yeah, I'm really curious to see how this thing pans out. Because I thought the original one was cool, but like as soon as people got it in their hands, they were like, yeah, this is a neat idea, but it really is too slow for what they wanted to do. So,
yeah. I've thought about picking up the ARM-based ones before because they're significantly cheaper. They're like 200 something bucks. And
yeah, those are like the god of emulators. Like if you're in
emulators, just for emulation purposes. But
yeah. So I don't know. That seems cool. So this week we've had a few different stories on the Harry Potter Hogwarts mystery. Like first it got revealed as a thing and then, turned out that you could, the Android soft launch was a thing. I'm not sure which territory it's soft launched in, but like you could pre-register on Android, which of course led to people actually, just capturing Android video of the soft launched. And it's, about what you'd expect, I think. Anyone that is disappointed by these gameplay videos, I'm really curious like what they thought was going to happen when a ultra casual free-to-play company makes a Harry Potter adventure game. So on the upside, it does definitely seem like if you're into Harry Potter, this will be a very, very, very cool game for you. Because it's like you create your own, like you effectively create your Hogwarts students. And like playing the game is going through and doing the different like Hogwarts tasks. Like in the videos I've seen, like, you know, you go to potions class and like all this other stuff. And there's different mini games associated with the different things you do in school. And it sounds like after you play long enough, like you'll graduate and rank up. And of course, you know, you find what house you're in. And presumably there's things to do with the different houses and all that stuff. But on the downside, there is, you know, a stamina system and what seems to be multiple currencies and basically every other freemium shenanigan you could possibly pack into one of these games. So I don't know. We'll see.
Which was not surprising to me in the least, but was surprising to some people.
Yeah. Well, so it seems like reading about this more, it seems like the monetization stuff is set up like almost exactly in line with those like the Kim Kardashian you know the titles of the super lightweight celebrity adventure games,
like pretend you're living their life game.
Yeah, whatever the title. There's a bunch of them. So it's set up like that. You know, there's only a certain amount of things you can do unless you buy more energy and, like, you know, you manage your money in game or whatever else. So I don't know. Like, if you want to play a real Harry Potter game, there are a million real Harry Potter games you can play. Like, you know, the especially if you're console or PC, like, you know, there's actual, like, real Harry Potter games, and there's the Lego Harry Potter games, which used to be on the App Store and have since been removed. But this is, and also the Pokemon Go Harry Potter game is coming out in the future. So I don't know, if this game isn't for you,
I feel like this game is going to be a mega hit.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. Like, I was kind of got into it with, like, the people in the comments that were like, oh, no one's going to play this free to play bullshit. And it's like, dude, where have you been?
Yes, they will.
Where have you been? If you don't think that anyone is going to, I mean, like, do you remember, what was it called? Like Pottermore, I think, or whatever. It was like a very, very, very shitty, in my opinion, a web game. And it was like the first official Harry Potter game or whatever, where, like, the big deal of it was, like, it was really hard to get into initially. And, like, everyone just wanted to see, like, where it was going to sort them with the sorting hat in the game. And, like, man, people I knew that, you know, just like casual Facebook gamer types were, like, blowing me up like crazy for, like, how to get into this Pottermore thing. And I was like, dude, I don't even really understand what this is. So I can't really help you. So if anyone thinks that this game isn't going to do well, I would love to smoke whatever it is that you're smoking, because, man.
Yeah.
Right?
Word.
So that, do we know when this is going to come out? I think it's just coming soon.
Spring or something. Soon. Yeah. I feel like it's not too far out.
Yeah. I mean, if they're soft launching it, it's probably, I would guess, weeks, if not a couple months out, maybe. Yeah. So another kind of weird news story. So Tomorrow Corporation announced 7 billion humans, which is a follow-up to Human Resource Machine. Spoilers, it's coming to iOS, but they're just not saying that. So it got announced for Switch and PC, which basically means we want to make money first before we release it on mobile. Because, like, when you watch the trailer and stuff, like, there's really nothing in it that couldn't be done on, it looks a lot like Human Resource Machine and stuff like that. So,
which I think all their games were pretty well received on mobile. So, you know, even if you can't charge as much or whatever, it's worth bringing eventually and making some money off of it.
Well, so this kind of links into our next news story, which has to do with Dandara, which has a new trailer. It's pretty cool. It's coming out on February the 6th. This game started out as a mobile game, like, in our forums. It's pretty cool, kind of like Metroidvania style game where you are, like, jumping from, like, it's effectively, like, is movement flick based? Do you remember?
It can be, but they adapted it to, like, controllers too. So
it's like one of these things where, like, you jump to a different platform and then you kind of, like, aim your jump where you're gonna go, and, like, every platform you stick to, but because you can jump and, like, stick to a platform above you, like, it really kind of messes with, like, well, what even is up in this game?
Yeah, and the levels all twist and all. It's a crazy. You should watch this new trailer if you haven't. It's really good.
So it looks really cool. But, like, what I really like about what Raw Fury is doing with this game is it's, like, much like what they did with Kingdoms, in that it's like, dude, we're releasing it everywhere. It's, you know, it's a $15 game. You can buy it on whatever platform you want. If that's mobile, cool. If you want to get mad that it's expensive on mobile and buy it on Switch instead, fine. Like, we don't care. And I really wish that more developers would kind of take that kind of outlook towards stuff, because I feel like things would be better overall if like, games just had their value, and we kind of tried to do away with this whole, like, oh, well, mobile game is only worth $2 kind of thing.
Right.
You know?
I'd be interested to know. So that game Judge from 10 Tons that came out like last week or week before, I forget, but anyway, it's like a dual stick shooter. They had already released on desktop a while ago, and I think consoles too. And so it came to mobile, where their previous game Neon Chrome was super well received on mobile a couple years ago. And so that was the first game they had used the pre-order system in the App Store, and they made a remark on Twitter or somewhere that was like, before the game had actually released, they're like, the pre-order numbers are way, way past our expectations. Like, we are very, very happy with the pre-order numbers. I can't believe, you know, we weren't expecting this at all.
Yeah.
And one of the things they did with theirs is they did a launch discount. The game is $10 normally, but they did $5 for the pre-order people, and then they actually extended that by a week for to not, you know, screw over the people that don't have iOS 11 and can't do pre-orders yet. So anyway, at $5, you know, ahead of time before the game was even out, they had sold more than they were expecting. I think that's really interesting. So Dandara is doing a launch discount too of $11.99, and the game will normally be $15. I'd be really interested to know what their pre-order numbers were too, or even just the fact if it was surprising to them or exceeded their expectations or what.
Yeah, I'm sure we can find out very easily.
It's also interesting to think that they're doing this multi-platform simultaneous launch all on the same day, all platforms, whereas Judge came out on other platforms first. It came to mobile several months later. So, I wonder if that really divvies up the numbers that you would have normally seen or something like that.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see. Like, so I hit up David Martinez today just at random, who's one of the guys from Raw Fury that we know. And he was kind of mentioning like how crazy this launch is for them, because it's like effectively a like launch on every platform with kind of like the budget for one platform.
Yeah.
So it sounds like they're spread pretty thin. But I think the more that this kind of stuff happens, like the better. Like I feel like Crashlands is another really good example of how to do all the kind of cross-platformy stuff, even though they did different pricing and things like that.
Right.
So I don't know. I would just love to see this stuff kind of like become the norm instead of, you know, the previous game, which is like very obvious. Like we're making our money on, you know, Steam and Switch first, and then we'll pick up the pieces on mobile, I guess.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Kind of bummer, but not super unexpected news that Nintendo is shutting down Miitomo on May 9th. So if you want to do any last minute Miitomo-ing, you've got about 2 months to do it, 3 months, I guess.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What's been so annoying about this story is like how many people are using this as like I told you so situation. Mm-hmm. When like, I don't know, my read on this game always was like, you know, like it's a Nintendo partner degree, right? And this always felt to me like they're like, let's feel this out and see how this even goes.
Yeah.
You know?
I kind of agree.
Which I don't think that Nintendo ever expected Miitomo to be like, oh, this is our new like fifth pillar title. Like it's going to be right. Mario, Zelda, Mario Kart, something else, and Miitomo as our new games going forward, right? So I don't know. This is weird.
I don't think they're expecting much with it either. I definitely think this was like a feel out process sort of release. I think they would have liked it to have been successful enough to keep doing it. But I'm not surprised that it's not. And, it's kind of a shame. It's sort of like how they shut down the Miiverse stuff. You know, it costs a lot to run it and it wasn't especially popular, but there's really like a hardcore, group of people that love that service.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was like a really big thing to them. And so shutting something down for those people is a big deal, and that's kind of sad. But I also kind of feel like this thing was just a clunky experience right out the gate. Like I had some neat ideas with sort of like the question answer stuff and kind of, you know, collecting items and customizing your little avatar and a couple little mini games or whatever. But every time I would go to like check it, it was like, okay, well, let me sit for 60 seconds while this thing loads everything and, you know, whatever. It was just like a really bad user experience.
Yeah.
For something when you can fire up Twitter or Facebook or something like that and load everything in seconds and just glance at it for, you know, however long you want, without much fuss. Miitomo never felt that way to me.
Yeah, but I mean, again, that's really why I think, like, you know, and it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, once, you know, in 20 years when no one cares about this anymore, when they're talking about, like, post-mortem stuff, it was like, like, we just wanted to see how many numbers, like, a Nintendo thing could get, so we knew how many servers to get, like, you know, how it would work to link up people's Nintendo accounts and people would link their Nintendo accounts, like all this other stuff. Like there's like, even though people think that Miitomo might've failed, like I promised the things that they learned from this game are more than valuable enough.
Yeah. It's like a mobile game tutorial for them.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. I agree with you. Like the problem was, it was like, it had like a really good, like first 3 days, right? Whereas like you're adding all your friends and making your little dude and, you know, the questions were amusing and, you know, like unlocking the different stuff was fun. And then it was like, you know, a weekend, you're like, all right, well, I'm bored of getting tickets to do the pachinko game or whatever, you know, it was called.
Yeah. I do think it would be cool.
Not Pachinki. Pachinki's a city.
I do think it would be cool if someday they created something that was sort of like this, that's sort of like quasi-gamified social network sort of thing, but that worked like cross-platform. So you'd have like a smartphone app, but then you could do stuff through the Switch with it, or the 3DS or like whatever, and have it all linked together and have it be an actual like smooth and good experience. That I could see being a lot more appealing than what Miitomo ended up being.
Yeah, I almost kind of wonder like how, if Miitomo would have been released, like remember when the Wii was new and it was like everything to do with Nintendo had to do with Miis in some way, like every game had like a playable Mii and like all that stuff, and they kind of encouraged, like I think, I never did it, but I think you could even like load your Mii onto your controller and bring your controller over to a friend's house and like load it under there or something like that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could do that,
Like, if this would have came out at, like, the height of Mii Mania, I think it would be totally different. But, like, by the time this came out, it was, like, Nintendo was really pulling away from Miis to the point where it was, like, I don't even know what purpose a Mii serves anymore other than, like, the little avatar face of your user account if you even
That's
have that
pretty
enabled.
Much it. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Not super surprising, I guess. But I guess if you're taking a victory lap on this, good on you. And enjoy it.
Fire Emblem Heroes, we'll have a word with you.
Yeah. So the Arena of Valor Switch beta kicks off this weekend. If you are in Europe and have hopefully by now gotten an email inviting you to it if you signed up for it, it runs from midnight UTC on the 27th and goes until midnight UTC on the 29th. I'm actually super curious to hear how this plays on the Switch. Because like the way that Arena of Valor works on mobile is pretty fascinating, because like, so you move on the left side with a virtual joystick, but you have your abilities on the right side, which are buttons that you push and then can drag to aim.
Yeah.
So like, for instance, if you have an ability that does like a circle target kind of thing, like when you push the button, it shows you the range of that ability and gives you like the targeting circle. And then you kind of like drag your finger in any direction to then move that circle. And it works amazing, right? And I'm really curious how they're going to emulate that on the Switch, right?
I'm guessing you're going to have to like click a button, like a face button will trigger, you know, the target, and then the right stick will be your aimer. That's my guess, but I don't know. Or I can see if they were using the shoulder buttons, it'd be pretty easy to like hold down a shoulder button while you aim with the right stick. But
yeah, maybe.
I don't know. It's definitely a very like, it feels like it was made for touchscreen sort of game, and it's always interesting when they translate that to physical controls, how that's going to work.
Yeah. So the way that Tencent is handling the regions of this game is irritating me on a level that's just kind of ridiculous, because like so I've been emailing with them. I'm like, hey, you know, like let me in on this European beta thing. Like, I would love to shoot some video of it and, you know, do a little article of like how it works and the difference between the two. Cause like, I think that kind of stuff is super interesting. Like even if you don't have a Switch, I still think it'd be an interesting read to be like, oh, well, that's kind of neat, like how they adapted a touchscreen thing, or, you know, the other way around or whatever else.
Right.
And they're just like, no, we can't. I was like, what do you mean you can't? Like, it's not possible. You're in North America. And I was like, I can make a European account. I can VPN into Europe. Switch isn't region locked.
Anything is possible.
Worst case scenario, like I have a dude that is in Europe. Like, what can we do? And they're like, sorry, it's not possible. So we're totally out on the Arena of Valor Switch beta, so that's cool. Yeah, Tencent.
That's dumb.
I don't know. It seems like a Chinese thing maybe to assume that like not that the rest of the world doesn't have instant access to information, right?
Yeah.
Because like, if you're interested, if you play this game in North America and you're interested in it coming to the Switch, like you're just going to hit up like Eurogamer and read their thing, and everyone else is going to be like, all right, well, do we write our own article, like sourcing Eurogamer and using some YouTube video because Tencent decided that no one in North America should know about this? Because like, I don't understand. So the drama surrounding loot boxes is not going away anytime soon. This week, Washington state lawmakers brought some stuff to the table to kind of try to figure out. It didn't sound like this was like, oh, we're going to make loot boxes illegal kind of thing. This kind of to me sounded more like they were like, hey, let's suss out like what's going on with these and like how we should, you know, fiddle with them moving forward and stuff like that, which I think is probably a good thing for everyone, right?
It seems sort of like let's standardize what the hell these loot box things are, So like, we know, you know, going forward how to treat them or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, because I think it's, you know, regardless of how you feel about loot boxes, like whether you hate them and think they're gambling or, you know, like don't really care too much. Like, I think everyone agrees that, like, you should be like, hey, if you're going to buy these like random elements in games that are being advertised to children and stuff, like maybe you shouldn't be able to buy them unless you're, you know, 18 or old enough to whatever age that is to understand, like,
right,
hey, this is a random thing and there's a very good chance that I'm like throwing my money in a fireplace.
Yeah.
When I do this kind of thing, like, and I think that's totally reasonable and everything else, but I don't know. Whatever. We'll see. The problem is that, like, these games are global, right? So
yeah. If, how do you enforce that stuff?
Yeah, if Washington State decides that loot boxes, you know, need to be a 16 or over kind of thing, like the logistics of all this is going to be a nightmare for game developers, I think, to try to figure out, like, okay, like, because what's going to happen is, like, someone with, like, an ad SDK is going to come out and be like, hey, just throw this in your game and it'll handle all the dumb crap and, like,
right,
get a cut of your loot boxes and give you even more aggressive loot boxes and all this other stuff. Like, I really don't think there's a situation where legislation makes this any better.
Yeah.
But
no, I agree.
We'll see. So Dice Soccer City is finally coming out February 1st, which is, that's next Wednesday, right? Next Thursday, I guess.
Thursday.
So, this is cool. Yeah, this is a game that I feel like we've seen at, like, every GDC going back to, like, the beginning of time.
Right? It feels that way sometimes.
So this looks kind of cool. It reminds me of, like, the Dice kind of sports games plus, like, a Kairosoft city builder sort of thing, which I think is a cool combination. I'd really love to know what's been going on behind the scenes with this, that, because, it seems like every time we see it, it's, like, slightly different. Maybe it has a different title, or they're like, oh, we don't have a title anymore. We have a working title, but it's not public or whatever else. Well, and
Dice Soccer came out in 2011, and I feel like pretty close after release, they were like, yeah, we want to do a follow-up. We have all these ideas. And so that was plus years ago.
Well, these are the guys that did Pixel People, right?
Yeah, I think that took up a big chunk of their time, which I noticed when I was writing this that Pixel People's gone from the App Store.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know what happened to it, but it's gone.
That's
though.
Too bad. That game was like the biggest thing ever for like a few
months. They had a follow-up plan for that too, the Super Pixel People or Pixel Power or something like that that we saw at one of the GDCs, and I don't think that's a thing anymore either, but anyway, at least this new Dice Soccer is coming out 7 years later.
Yeah, I guess so. Real quick, the Kingdom Rush trilogy, if you have an iPhone 10, it is now widescreen supported. Looks really good on the screen. You know, that's basically it. So update those games if you have forgotten about them. I think they're also, are they on sale as well? Oh, they're not on sale, but they're not expensive, so check it out. I just wanted to mention this Till the Dawn game, because I shared this to my girlfriend. She's like, why would anyone make a game like that? Because it's
a lot of people are asking that question.
Yeah, so the premise of the game is you're a pet that has been abandoned. You play as an abandoned dog, and you have to like try to make it back to your owners.
Well, you don't ever get to make it back.
Spoilers.
Well, I mean, you can. There's multiple endings. So, you know, you can stay there and wither away and die, or you can find ways to survive. I don't think any of them involve you reuniting with your owner.
Oh, really?
But I could be wrong.
That's even worse then.
So I thought this was interesting. They posted this in our forums, and I guess it released on Steam like a couple weeks ago and has been getting kind of an interesting reception. They were inspired by this game from all the hurricanes last year. They read stories about how people would have to just up and abandon their pets because their house would flood in 10 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
And how they wanted to know like what that was like from a pet's perspective that, you know, has been abandoned by their owner and has no idea how to, you know, compute what is actually happening or going on. They don't know that there's a disaster and everyone had to flee or whatever, you know. So it's sort of like what's going through a dog's mind when they get abandoned like that. This game, there's no sort of like flood premise that I know of. It's sort of just like the owner drives out to the desert and stakes their dog in the ground in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, basically like the most evil sociopath owner ever that just wants to, you know, this dog to suffer and die. But anyway, so you're the dog and you're stuck out in the desert and you're sort of like not sure what's going on and you're kind of waiting for your owner to come back and, you're able to sort of chat with the animals that live in the desert And there's kind of a branching dialogue choices that you can make, which will lead to the multiple endings or whatever. And so I think the point of this game is to give you an idea of a pet's perspective to something like being abandoned, which I guess not a lot of people might think of what's actually happening with the dog.
Yeah, I don't know. This is just one of those games to me that I'm not interested in playing at all.
I don't think I am either, but I thought it was an interesting idea.
Yeah, like that game, like that Dragon Cancer. I
couldn't touch that one, yeah.
There's a bunch of other games that are like that, where it's like the entire point is to make you sad. And I'm just like, dude, why would you even play that? Like, I understand why. Like, you know, it's an experience and people like that kind of thing. And it's good as an art game kind of statement sort of stuff. But like, dude, I play games to have fun with my friends.
Yeah.
Not to be like, oh, wow, it actually does suck to be a dog that's been abandoned by your owner.
Who would have known that poor loyal dog would not like this?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It's a thing, so that's coming out soon.
It's a game, yeah. So Super Bowl mania is kind of starting to spool up already, which isn't surprising considering it's, not this Sunday but next Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So Mercedes-Benz is getting ahead of everything with a new promotion that they're kicking off, that they're going to run a game during the Super Bowl called, Last Fan Standing. So basically they're taking, and it seems like, you know, I hear about these on the news every now and again, where it'll be like a car dealership will have like a car on their lot. And it's like the last person touching the car gets the car for free. And they're always associated with stories where it's like, oh, this person like didn't pee for 4 days and now is suffering from like kidney damage or, you know, something else crazy like that.
One of those happened in my hometown here with a radio station that a chick died from not peeing for too long for some contest on the radio.
It was like, I think it was hold your wee for a wee or something like that.
That was here in Sacramento. Ooh, pride.
Yeah. So this is a very similar thing, but it's a mobile game that you play, I guess. So
my question with this is that, so how do you know, I mean, how are they going to know, and how is there not going to be like a billion winners to this? Because so the idea is that you're touching your finger on the screen and you're keeping it on this moving picture of a car for as long as possible. And the last person that's still touching the car wins it or whatever. But it's all remote. Like the thing about the car dealership thing is like you're there physically and that is hard. You can't go to the bathroom. You maybe can't sit down, or you have to hope people will bring you food and stuff. This is like, dude, you could be sitting in your hot tub with your hand on the phone. And I don't know. I just don't know the logistics behind how they're going to be able to verify that somebody didn't, you know, you drop a hot dog on there. Just go for a run. It just seems like a really silly, dumb thing.
Well, dude, I promise there's going to be some bullshitty thing with this, or like the game is going to be impossibly difficult, or there's something else. Like, this can't possibly be as legit as they're kind of making it sound, right?
I'm curious to see how it goes down.
Because, like, you know, especially as, so Carter, left Touch Arcade to work for a kind of, like, online tournament esports company kind of thing. And from the sounds of it, it's, like, the kind of, and I know this firsthand, like, the kind of things that people will do, even for, like, prizes that have effectively no value. I mean, like, that, that whole thing a couple of weeks ago where the guy got swatted and died was like over $2 of online currency or something like that, right? Yeah. So imagine that, but for a $55,000 luxury sports car sedan thing.
Yeah. Don't know.
Man, I don't like, whoever thought this was a good idea,
You know what they need to do is this needs to be an AR thing where you have to like physically run around in the world trying to keep up with a car. And those would be people running into traffic and, you know, who knows what.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'll check it out, but I'm not planning on winning. So last story I have on my list is Paco 2 is coming to iOS next week. I didn't even know this was a thing.
Came out on Steam in November, I think. And it's funny because I love the first Paco so much that you know, I followed these guys on Twitter and stuff. And so when they were like talking like, oh, we're making a sequel, I was like, yes. And then they're like, oh, here's Steam this, Steam that. It's coming to Steam this day and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, man, really? Like, you know, and it looked like such a more sophisticated game that it kind of made me think, well, they're not even going to bring this to mobile.
Yeah, because the original Paco, was it Paco Car Chase Simulator, right? Was the full
Yeah.
Like what you did was you just drove around and not run into things, and you're getting chased by the police or whatever, which is really cool.
Yeah, real minimalist graphics and stuff, too. It wasn't
So this one, it seems like they're just like pulling out all the stops, and there's a bunch of crap to do. It looks like there's a weapon system and like.
Yeah, this one you can actually, you know, instead of just aimlessly driving around with cops chasing you for no reason whatsoever, you're actually, you know, I don't know, bank robbers or whatever. And so part of your job as the driver is to go pick up people from your crew and then like deliver them to spots safely without getting caught. And so there's sort of like a, it's sort of like a mission system, I guess. And then you can also fire back at the oncoming police this time too, which you couldn't do in the first game.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It looks super cool and it's coming next week and I'm glad it is coming to mobile. First game was one of my favorites.
Yeah. So it seems really neat. So as far as games that came out this week, there's a bunch of stuff and a bunch of stuff that came out last week that we didn't get to talk about. So
that's
running kind of long though. So let's pick our favorites of these. Which one do you want to talk about first?
I like, oh man, this is tough. I'd either Super Fancy Pants or this Thumper game, which is very strange.
Super Fancy Pants? Well, which one? Name it.
Fancy Pants me. I like this game a lot.
Super Fancy Pants Adventures. Yeah, we actually have a review on the site of this.
Yeah. Yeah, so the first game, so this started out as a Flash game like 10 years ago and became super popular. And then the guy that made it kind of released new episodes occasionally and kind of added to it. And then they kind of bundled all of those Flash games together and released them on iOS. Chilingo actually published it in 2011 or something like that, 2010 maybe. I mean, quite a while ago. And that version actually ended up biting the dust at some point in time. And then the guy behind this series kind of spruced up the iOS version and re-released it last year under like his own name and stuff.
Yeah, because so, Chilingo and a lot of those old publishers basically just like released all those games. So that's why.
Yeah, it, a lot of games have gone through being a Chilingo published game at some point and then having to, you know, get republished by the people that made them. But so the original games are on iOS and this is the sequel. Technically, I guess you could call it the fourth game in the series. And it came out on desktop like pretty recently, too. I want to say November for this one, too. And was super well received.
Yeah, I mean, the animations in this game are just off the chain.
So good. And what was kind of cool is that, so, you know, those old Flash games were old. And for a lot of years, it kind of seemed like this guy wasn't doing anything. And people were always like, oh, man, you should make a new Fancy Pants game, like, whatever. And then last year, they kind of busted out. It's like, oh, we are, and it's coming this year, and it's super, you know, awesome. It's got all these new mechanics and new levels and stuff. So,
did we mention that this isn't, like, an action platformer? I don't know if we did or not.
I don't know if we did or not.
Genre.
Somebody described it as, it's like a parkour platformer, which I think is a good description because there's a lot of, like, running up walls and flipping, and it's very fast-paced. And Sean, in his review, even kind of likens it to a Sonic the Hedgehog game, which I think is in some ways accurate. But it's very much a floaty parkour style platformer. And I actually read a review of the desktop version and I forget where I read this, but the person described it as it felt like a Tony Hawk game. And I think that is also a really cool description because there's a lot of points in this game where, you know, for as simplistic as the controls are, you can do a lot of different things. So there's like a lot of flat bars where you can grind on your feet. And then there's some poles you can slide down and things like that to where once you get going and get some speed going, it almost does feel like you're doing like some Tony Hawk style combos with all the jumps and grinds and things that you're doing. So I thought that was kind of a cool comparison. But yeah, definitely an action platformer and definitely content heavy. There's so much stuff to do in this game, so many levels and things to collect and so many secret areas. So if you're the kind of person that's like, you know, wants tons and tons and tons of stuff to do, then this is a really good option.
Yeah, and this game is super cool. I highly, highly recommend, like, at minimum, read Sean's review because I think he did a really good job of like explaining.
And also the original, which this is iPhone 10 optimized, which I love, and the original version is not. I don't know if it'll ever get it or not, but it's free. So you can actually try that first version to kind of get an idea of, you know, how the game flows and kind of how the platforming is. And if it's something you like, you can safely buy this one, because I feel like this one's definitely superior. But yeah, treat the original game as kind of a trial version if you want.
Yeah, super, super good though. So I think the big game that came out this week, and I need to kind of prime the pump to get it going on the video podcast, but the Room Old Sins was released, which I put up a pretty long review of. Oh shit, hang on, I gotta get this.
Whoa.
For whatever reason, Unity games in the latest version of iOS 11 like will not start via or won't start if you have AirPlay mirroring active. You have to start the game, or quit AirPlay mirroring, start the game, and then AirPlay mirror again. So we'll start a new game here just so I can talk about what's going on and not spoil anything. My guy Jared sucks.
Okay.
So the Room came out, the first one came out in what, 2012,
13? Oh, I want to say.
And it was one of those games that just, I feel like, surprised everyone.
Yeah.
Because kind of it came out at a time where, like, there were 3D games, but there weren't, like really good 3D games.
Mm-hmm.
And the games that were 3D were games like, Xenbound and stuff like that, where it's like a 3D object, but... You know, yeah. Like it's not like, you know, crazy or anything. And so the Room came out and it was a huge interactive puzzle box sort of thing, which was, you know, unlike anything that I had played before ever. Not much less, you know, ever on iOS and stuff. So
yeah.
Just super cool game. And it was one of those games that like even like everyone was talking about on Twitter, like even people that like aren't into mobile games or whatever were like all about the Room and things like that.
Right.
The problem with the original was that you could beat it in, I don't know, maybe an hour or two, something like that. Mm-hmm.
You could also get super stuck for an hour on one little part, but
yeah, well,
it wasn't a super long.
Yeah, I'm saying like 2 hours given time to get stuck and diddle around and everything else, which is, you know, even by mobile standards, you know, for a couple bucks is kind of, you know, I think people expect more than that. So, we gave a 4 out of 5 when it came out, largely because like the game just sort of ends, and I think that is because. Like, I really don't think that they expected this to become like a series, right?
Well, like,
it's like, you know, there's a very bare bones story in the game, but it like doesn't make a lot of sense. You're just like basically like trying to get this inside the box that holds some secret element or, you know, something else like that. That's kind of it. And then when you get to center, it just sort of ends.
Yeah.
And then a little while later, they released an epilogue to it that actually kind of like gave the game like a conclusion, I think. But I my theory on that is, and you know, they've never said anything to the effect of this, but I think they were like, fuck, well, this game did really well, we need to make a sequel, but like we've left ourselves with nothing to do that, so like let's
lore build the first one a little bit before
let's do this epilogue and make it make sense. So then the Room was really good, the epilogue was great, you know, added what we wanted basically to the game, which is, you know, some cohesive ending sort of thing. So after that, the Room 2 came out, and the Room 2 is basically the Room with tons more content. Like, it was
way amped up,
like not just like one room this time, instead it was multiple rooms and multiple puzzle boxes across different rooms and all sorts of other stuff, which is a really, really great sequel, I thought. Then the Room 3 came out, which I was not super duper wild about, because instead of it felt to me, and you know, it was hotly debated on the internet, even in the comments of our review, it felt to me like the focus was not as much on the puzzle boxes anymore, as much as it was like this whole like narrative world they were crafting with this dude called the Craftsman and like all this other stuff, and you were actually in this like weird castle-y thing that you were exploring, and it was kind of like. Like, I don't know. I always really like the Room games because I thought the whole like puzzle box element was super unique. Like I said, you know, the first Room, I'd never played anything like that before. It was just
idea of like you can make a just crazy complex object and just have that be the entire game based around this, you know, massively, you know, intricate thing.
Yeah. So super cool. But like, I don't know, like the third one, I feel like if I wanted to play a game like Myst, I would play Myst, you know, and I just kind of wanted a tighter integration of the puzzle box mechanics and not necessarily like, all right, let's wander around this thing. And
that was definitely the polarizing point for the Room series, because some people were like, oh, this is so great, this is the direction I would love this series to go. And some people were like, I like the other ones better.
Yeah. So what this game does is it is just one, like, so it's interesting. Cause like, so this dollhouse here, which if you're looking at the video version, you can see it, but it's in the main screenshot of the review or whatever. This is the puzzle box. Like there's one puzzle box in this. However, the dollhouse, so in previous games they introduced it, or they introduced this, well, I guess to all the games they had the spyglass mechanic, right? So you have this eyepiece thing which you can use to sort of like look inside of stuff and like you know, find like hidden junk and see like secret writing and things like that. And I think, wasn't it the third one that introduced this kind of like rainbowy stuff that you could like look through your eyepiece and like zoom in to kind of like go deeper into the puzzle, right? I think that's the third one that introduced that. So this game is a lot of that, but it's all inside the dollhouse. So like, so you're moving, technically speaking, like you're moving around from room to room, kind of like the room three, but because it's all contained in this like one puzzle box of a dollhouse, like you don't kind of get that like weird feeling of like, God, I'm like, I just don't want to do this like adventure game thing. Like I just want puzzle boxes, which is strange. Cause like, I don't, you know, it's kind of like, it's straddling the line there, and it really depends like what way you look at it.
Right.
As to whether or not it's really, you know, even a thing to be worried about. So
yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. Is it a matter of perspective, or, you know, is it really that?
So like, so I got, the first thing you do is you like open the door and you zoom into like a room that's inside of this dollhouse, which has its own puzzle box and stuff like that now that you're fiddling with. So I don't know. Like it's, I think it's really, I really liked the direction of this game.
Yeah.
And I think that if you were one of those people that were a little cranky about it, you know, maybe potentially taking a step back from the room three, like, I don't think that's the case at all.
I'd be really curious to hear from people that, just based on your review or based on what they've heard about the game that haven't actually played it, that are sort of upset. I'd love to hear from those people again after they play the game to hear what they thought. If it was like, it actually wasn't as different as I thought or I heard or whatever. Or if it was like a nice mixture of the two sort of things of room exploring and puzzle boxing. I don't know. It's I think one thing for sure is that it's a really good game no matter what.
Yeah.
It just kind of depends on which style of room game you're hoping for, I guess.
I mean, I think it is kind of like the third style. It's just a matter of like how you're thinking about it. Because I like, I don't know. Like, I found the whole like all the movement to be kind of exhausting in the room three. But because like you're doing a lot of movement in this too, but it's all like, all right, I'm gonna zoom out a little bit and then like zoom in to this next thing. Not like
instead of like, damn, I have to trek back to the library room.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Like, all right, I gotta go all the way up the stairs again and like all this stuff. Like you don't really do that in this. So
It's interesting.
Overall, really good game. If you haven't played the room games, like, man, I don't know what you're doing. Some of the best
play
games
the
on the
games.
App Store.
Yeah.
I don't really know if any one of them is really that much better than the other. Like, that's another cool thing is, like, they're all such good games that it's not like, oh, don't even bother playing the Room 1 through 3 because the fourth one is so good.
They're all worth playing.
Yeah, all really good. And, like,
you start with the first.
Yeah, like, you don't care about, like, the ramping up story and stuff, which immediately, like, you can go through a room game and just totally ignore the story, like, and just play the puzzles and stuff like that and be totally fine. Yeah. But if you care about the story stuff, you start with the first one because that's you know, where everything begins. And you learn about the null and what the null even is, and you see what happens at the end, and which links into the second one and third one and so on. So, but this game is sort of is not a direct sequel to the third. It's kind of like a spin-off game, which, again, really, really only matters if you care about the story.
Right.
If you don't care about the story, it doesn't matter. You just play the puzzle boxes and all this stuff. If you do care about the story, it kind of like fills in, I don't know, I guess like fills in the gaps of like some of the mysteries surrounding like the room universe without necessarily directly linking to the events of the third one.
Yeah.
I think is the best way to kind of put it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Cool game. They're all cool games. Start with the first one because they're all great. So I think we got time for like one more without making the podcast super long. Any of these you want to specifically?
Well, this Thumper game is pretty crazy if you want to check that out.
Let's jump into this.
So I knew this game had come out on Switch, and I think it was on Steam too. But I only had ever heard of it because it was an upcoming Switch game. And all I really knew about it was, oh, it's a rhythm game. And I was like, oh, I don't really love rhythm games, so whatever. And then when I found out, you know, it was one of the first pre-order games last month. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting. It's coming to mobile. That's cool. And, you know, one of the cool things about it was it plays in portrait mode. I guess you're on an iPad, so it doesn't matter. But if you're on
portrait mode too.
Oh, there you go. So if you're on the iPhone, it plays in portrait mode, and it's kind of like a single touch game. So it's a really nice portrait mode game. Which I would actually almost prefer over playing something like this on my Switch. But anyway,
I can't actually hear the music while I'm playing this.
Well, that's what I'm getting to. It's not actually a typical rhythm game. It's really just a fast reaction game. So you're traveling down this lane, sort of like a Temple Run sort of game. You're this weird silver scarab thing. And you can tilt your device to change your angle on the lane, but you don't ever have to actually tilt for gameplay purposes. It's just sort of this superfluous thing that you can do. But there's these bright spots that will be coming towards you on the track, or actually you're coming towards them on the track. And then you want to tap the screen right in line with the bright spot as you pass it. And then if you do that, you can, you know, fire a bolt of energy at this boss thing. There's boss fights in this game. And then as you play further, they introduce new mechanics like sometimes you'll have to press and hold and there will be like these barriers that you break through. And then you can also curves will come up in the track. And so much like Temple Run, you'll swipe left or right to, change direction. But then sometimes there's longer curves, too, where you have to actually swipe and hold. And so sort of the gist of this game is combining all those things in a really fast manner. So you'll have to maybe like tap and then tap and hold and then swipe and then tap again and then tap and hold and then swipe and hold or whatever. It'll do these things in a really, really quick manner. And you have to hit them all correctly in order to, you know, defeat the boss that you're up against or whatever. And then you'll travel for a little bit in between bosses and stuff like that. And then everything's based on how well you manage to hit all of the cues that you're supposed to hit. I feel like I'm doing just a terrible job explaining this. It's sort of like it's sort of a runner, but sort of a reaction game. And it's all single tap, which I thought was really interesting too. And like I said, I think this game works really well as a portrait game. And it's sort of one of those things you can kind of play. Like, it's not a rhythm game where you necessarily have to listen to the music, but if you do, you sort of get you sort of understand why it's called Thumper, because it's got this really sort of like, I don't know, like just sort of this really weird beat thing going on. And so the things that you're doing on screen do sort of happen in time with the beat, but it's not necessarily like a rhythm game that you have to do things with the beat because like you're reacting to the visual cues instead.
This is a cool mobile game, but I feel like if I paid like $15 for this on the Switch, I'd be like, this is it. I bought a runner.
Yeah, it's strange. And so the other thing that's going on with this game, besides the mechanics, is that it's just like a trippy, crazy visual thing. So the entire time there's just like wavy stuff in the distance, and the bosses you fight look like these weird things that you would find in the Upside Down and Stranger Things and stuff. Like it's just a weird kind of creepy game. So I don't know. I thought it'd be worth talking about because it's much more than I thought it was going to be. It's a lot different than I thought it'd be. I thought it was like, oh, cool, you know, a psychedelic rhythm game. And it's kind of not that. It's really a fast reaction sort of game. And it kind of reminded me of fighting bosses in Sword and Sorcery too, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I can see that.
Kind of like follow patterns, and you had to really quickly tap, you know, at certain times. And if you screwed it all up, you know, had to start over. You don't necessarily have to start over in this one, although you can. But more than anything, it kind of scores you based on how well and how accurate you are. I don't know. It's kind of a trip. It's the sort of game that I wish. I think it's $5 on mobile, but I wish it was like free with like an unlock, because I feel like you don't get it until you actually sort of play it.
You know what would be really good for this as far as a payment model, I think, is if they did like the like does not commute style of like, all right, like the game's free and you can download
like rewind it. Or something.
Well, no. But if you want checkpoints, you need to pay.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, like you got to do the game in one run. Yeah.
Would totally remind me of that, because the levels are broken up into really tiny chunks. So, you know, it'll only take you 30 seconds or something to play through like a whole section and fight a boss and then move on to the next one. So yeah, that would work out super duper well. But I feel like this isn't a game. It's hard to explain, and it's hard to even understand if you watch a video, I think. I think you have to actually play it to sort of understand what it's like. But it's a really good feeling, especially like the swiping and holding stuff feels really cool. Like you're sort of power sliding your way through. And once you get the timing down of when you're supposed to tap on, you know, the sections, things get a little bit easier. But I've only played through the first.
You have a lot of stuff going on at one time in this, surprisingly.
Yeah,
so.
It's like a very busy game. Hmm. But it's really cool when they string a bunch of stuff together and you kind of pull it all off. It's a really nice feeling. So yeah. I don't know. It's a neat game. It's just maybe not what you'd expect. And I feel like it's not going to be for everybody, but
yeah, it seems pretty cool. Thumper. So yeah, that's Thumper. It's a pretty surprisingly neat game.
Yeah.
Anything else we should hit real quick before we ride the podcast into the sunset here?
Ready to eat lunch.
All right, cool. Well, thanks a ton for listening to this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show. As we mentioned at the start of the show, this podcast, as well as our website itself, are primarily supported by Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/touch arcade. If you back us on Patreon, you can see all these games that we're talking about in real time, which makes Jared's ridiculous explanations of games like Thumper make a lot more sense when you can just see it. If you're not super into the Patreon thing, but still want to help out, you can do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. It goes a long way to do your shopping through there, particularly if you do like grocery shopping and stuff, cause that pays off pretty well. We have a Twitch channel at twitch.tv/toucharcade, Discord at discord.gg/toucharcade. And if you like this episode of the show, please leave us a review on iTunes. And if you want to send us an email, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. Otherwise, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.